in the spring, it's so nice. So I'll talk about this relation between the four-dimensional gauge theory, especially the instant from partition functions, and two-dimensional conformal blocks somehow associated with that. So my talk will be based on my work with Luis Fernando Alday and Davide Gaiotto from June last year, and I may have some time to talk about something new, which I'm now doing with Fernando. Okay, so the very basic idea is kind of simple. So the idea is to start from a six-dimensional strange theory living on M5 brains, and you start from six-dimensional theory, but you put the theory on four-dimensional spacetime times two-dimensional spacetime, and you try to calculate some physical quantity of that six-dimensional theory. But one big assumption we make is that this physical quantity Z can be calculated in from the lower dimensional point of view by performing Kaltz-Klein reduction. So if you Kaltz-Klein reduce along the two-dimensional part, you get some 4D theory on living on this 4D spacetime. On the other hand, if you Kaltz-Klein reduce along this X4 direction, you get a 2D theory on living on this two-dimensional spacetime. But well, we assumed that this quantity Z can be calculated exactly on after dimensional reduction. So some quantities on this 4D side should equal another physical quantity on the 2D side. But of course, it is very difficult to carry out this procedure in completely rigorous terms, because we don't know what is this six-dimensional 2,0 theory. But at least there is a suggestion that some 4D quantity on a suitable 4D theory should equal to 2D theory, to 2D quantity on a 2D theory. So what we want to do is to try to establish this type of mapping explicitly. And indeed, you can establish a few relations of this kind. So the first thing discovered is this relation between something called Nekrasov's instanton partition function, which I will explain shortly, in the 4D side, and the standard Virasoro conformal block on the 2D side. You can also consider a full partition function, just the partition function of the gauge theory on S4, and it can be found to be really equal to the full correlation function of the 2D theory called Liouville theory or Todak theory, depending on the number of M5 brains you start with. And also there are nice work by a group at Stony Brook who calculated a superconformal index of the 4D theory, and they found that they provide a two-dimensional topological quantum field theory. So, of course, you can come up with whatever other physical quantity in 4D theory, and you should be able to get some interesting 2D theory living on the 2D surface. So I'd like to emphasize that here, 4D part and 2D part came from the original world volume of the six-dimensional theory. So that's the basic idea. So today I'd like to explain in a bit detail how this mapping between the instanton partition function and the Virasoro conformal block works. Yep.
Quantum field theory, is it a Lagrangian, or is it just an abstract set of rules that satisfies the
So far, they haven't been able to find a Lagrangian for the theory. So what they have is just a set of three-point functions, which of the 2D TQFT, which satisfy the axiom of topological quantum field theory. Yeah, so they reduce to a certain strange identities between elliptic gamma functions or whatever. So this is a very short, brief introduction, and I will review in detail how the calculation goes in the 4D gauge theory side and also in the 2D CFT side. And I I would hope to clarify how the mapping goes from the 4D side to the 2D side. And if time remains, I will talk about something slightly new about the surface operator. So let me begin with the 4D analysis. And the main topic, main gate setup I will talk about is n equals 2 gauge theory in four dimensions. So what happens is that you start from a six-dimensional theory which has 16 supercharges, and if you compactify that on a flat two-dimensional surface, you can preserve all of the supersymmetry, but because we want to compactify that on a general 2D surface, you need to at least break half of the supersymmetry. So you start from 60 supercharges theory, and you end up with 8 supercharges theory. So I like to review the structure of those theories. So if you have a gauge field, F mu nu, and with ij indices, which are for SUN gauge group, so I or j run from 1 to n, capital N, and n equals 2 supersymmetry generates a fermion associated to this gauge field, and also a scalar, complex scalar associated to that. N equals 2 gauge theory has a very big moduli space of vacuum, so you can choose a nice vacuum expectation values for the scalar field, preserving the supersymmetry. So classically, what you can do is to give a diagonal expectation value for this complex scalar field, phi, so you have diagonal elements, a1, a2, dot, 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 to an. Well, I should use capital N here. This vacuum expectation value breaks the original SUN gauge group down to U1 to some power. So what happens to the gauge kinetic term is that, so you start from, well, this is the gauge kinetic term times the F squared, and this SUN kinetic term is broken down to a certain coupling of U1 gauge fields. So there are N minus 1 U1 gauge fields labeled by I. Sorry for using the same index, but you have Fi or mu nu, and there can be, in general, off-diagonal terms coming from the quantum corrections. So the achievement 15 years ago by Seiberg and Witten, I guess it's 15 or 16 years ago, was to determine this object completely, exactly. So the way they did it is to use the structure of n equals 2 supersymmetry. So what happens is that, for example, if you use n equals 2 superspace, you have, because we have an 8 supercharges theory, you have 8 super coordinates, and you can split 8 super coordinates into a chiral one, thetas, and anti-chiral ones, theta bars. So the standard kinetic term can be written as trace of capital phi squared integrated over the chiral half of the superspace. So this capital phi contains all of the components, and because theta squared, so this is the theta component, and this is the theta squared component, right? So by hitting phi squared 4 times by theta integral, you get FF, right? So this is the standard kinetic terms, but what happens if you break SUN to N minus 1 is that you get the general function of the lowest component, AI, of this gauge field. So this is the U1 gauge field, unbroken, and you have a corresponding complex scalar field A. And the good thing is that this curly F needs to be a holomorphic function of A, because this is an integral, super integral over the holomorphic half of the spacetime. So the good thing about holomorphic functions is that you don't need to really study it at everywhere in the moduli space, because if you know the singularity of the and the behavior, how F behaves close to the singularity, the holomorphy determines the form of F at everywhere. It's like using the Cauchy's theorem to determine the holomorphic meromorphic function given the residues. So that way, a good intuition about the structure of the moduli space gives you the exact form of capital F. So that's what Seibert and Witten did. So let me spell it out more fully. So perturbatively, what happens is that F of A is, as I said, just the square of the lowest component and multiplied by the complex five-gauge coupling. And the one loop contribution is something like AI minus AJ squared times log of A minus AJ. So what's going on here is that with that vacuum expectation value of A1, A2, dot, 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 you have a W boson coming from the off-diagonal terms of the gauge field, which have masses AI minus AJ. And you can calculate easily how the one-loop contribution from those W bosons are. And each W boson contributes like a, each W boson of mass M contributes like M squared log M to the prepotential. So this is just a summation over all of them. And it is known that there's no higher loop contribution, but there are lots of instanton corrections, which comes with the power of the gauge theory scale. So F of K of A is the instanton corrections coming from K instanton sector. And people, because Seibert and Witten determined this F in an interesting manner using the family of Riemann surfaces, people spend much time to really calculate this instanton corrections explicitly using the instanton integral. And for example, the first correction has this nice form, and you can really calculate that. So there is a very thick review by Dore, Hollowood, et cetera, on this instanton calculation. And today's main topic, main subject, is the Nekrasov's instanton partition function, which can be thought of as a rather glorified, generalized kind of prepotential. So it depends not only on A, vacuum expectation value, but also on epsilon1 and epsilon2, which are two deformation parameters. So this thing depends on two more parameters. And in fact, this Z, as we'll shortly see, is easier to calculate than F of A itself from the perspective of instantons. So let me define for you what is this capital Z. So we use the letter Z because it's really a partition function of this theory. So what you do is to first consider a 5D version of the same theory. So you take the same matter content and put the theory in 5D. But you want to really consider the 4D theory, so you need to compactify the 5D theory on S1. But if you just compactify that on S1 and take the small beta limit to go back to 4D theory, you don't really get anything. So in order to introduce two extra parameters, what you do is when you glue this X5 equals 0 plane and X5 equals beta plane, you rotate the upper plane by a 4D space-time rotation omega. So epsilon1 is just the rotation angle of the x1, x2 plane, and epsilon2 is the rotation angle of the x3, x4 plane. The rotation angle is beta times epsilon1 and beta times epsilon2. And you can also put the gauge rotation, which cannot be depicted here, but you can consider gluing the two using the gauge rotation, which has this diagonal element. And you take the beta goes to zero limit. So what happens basically is that because of this rotation, any excitations around here are forced to rotate, right? So they get extra energy. So effectively you have some harmonic potential confining all of the excitations close to the origin of the R4, so you can make sense of calculating the partition function of this theory, because effectively the spacetime is compact now, right? If the spacetime is infinite, typically Z or log of Z will be proportional to the volume, so this will diverge. But because of the rotation, it doesn't really diverge, it's just a finite quantity, and you can calculate it. And indeed, if you take epsilon 1 and epsilon 2 to be small, which makes the potential very shallow, you see that this partition function will diverge, like 1 over epsilon 1 and epsilon 2. So that's the intuition behind the necklace of partition function. And you can calculate it. So there is a, so because this is a supersymmetric quantity, you can express it as an integral over the moduli space of the instantons because it only receives contribution from the half supersymmetric states, and half supersymmetric states needs to be an anti-self dual instanton configuration. So this n of k is a un instantons with k instanton number k, and this has 4nk parameters. So this is a very complicated space, and you need to integrate over it a very complicated integrand. But there is a nice mathematical theorem which allows us to compute this thing just as a summation over the fixed point of SO4 times SUn action on this instanton moduli. So what happens is that a point on the instanton moduli specifies a particular shape of instanton. And of course, you can start from an instanton and rotate by SO4 rotation, and again, you get an instanton, which means that this SO4 rotation of the spacetime acts on this instanton moduli. Similarly, you can perform the global gauge rotation of SUn to a given instanton configuration, and that translates to, again, an isometry on this MK. In that kind of situation, there is a mathematical theorem which allows you to calculate this complicated integral by just summing over certain rational functions associated to each of the fixed point. And so you need to know what kind of fixed points there are on this instanton moduli space, but it is also studied, it was also studied by many people when non-commutative geometry became first popular in string theory community, and they are labeled by N Young diagrams. So the way you can think of it is as follows. If you have a vacuum expectation value, and if you think of constructing the gauge theory in terms of D-brains, you have D-brains separated and placed at each VEV specified. So this is some coordinate along the extra dimensions, and you have one D-brain at coordinate A1, another D-brain at coordinate A2, et cetera, et cetera. And gauge theory instantons can also be realized in string theory as D instantons itself. So you can realize one instanton as one D instanton. So these blue blobs represent the D instantons. But careful calculation shows that D instantons need to stack on one of the three brains, and also D instantons need to neatly stack among themselves so as to form a Young diagram. Young diagram is just this shape of decreasing number of blobs. So, I quickly went through the derivation, but end result is that there is a very explicit formula which expresses this Z of A as a summation over Young diagrams. So you need to sum over all of the N choices of Young diagrams without any constraint, and you weight with the number of the boxes in the Young diagrams, and there is a very complicated contribution there. But it's very explicit.
Yeah. SUn?
You don't. It's a you only see U1 to the F, which still acts. That's the only thing. So let's consider the most easy case, which is pure SU2. So you start from a pure SU2 gauge theory, and as I told you, this Z of A is given by a summation over a pair of Young diagrams, and you have a very complicated contribution. So this is something like this. And there is a nicer way to write down, rewrite this formula. So what you do is to consider a vector space, infinite dimensional vector space, which associates a number to each pair of Young diagram. So this is a summation over a pair of Young diagrams like this, right? So you associate a number B00 to a pair of empty Young diagram, and for a pair of Young diagram, empty Young diagram and box, you associate another number in the same way. So this associates a pair of a box and a box and a number, right? So this is an association of a complex number to a pair of Young diagrams. So it's an infinite dimensional vector space. And you introduce an inner product between two such vectors by this formula. So you just multiply the components and normalize with this gauge multiplet contribution. So this is the one loop fluctuation around the instanton contribution. So let's consider this very stupid vector, which associates lambda to the number of the boxes, right, to square, like this. And if you plug this into this definition, it is almost clear that this gives you lambda to four times the number of boxes because of this definition, because this gives lambda to two times the boxes, and this gives lambda to the power of two times the number of the boxes. So this Z of A for the pure gauge theory is just an inner product of this stupid vector with itself in this terminology. So this is a very strange reformulation, but you will see why I did this later. Let's consider another case. Next simple case is SU2 with four flavors. So SU2 gauge theory with four extra hypermultiplets. And so there are mass parameters for each of the flavors. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4 mass parameters. But here it is nicer to think of this as SU2 times SU2 times SU2 gauge theory, but the gauge coupling constant of the first and the last SU2 to be put to zero. So if you do formulate this way, you effectively have three spaces of VA associated, right? So this VA is associated to each gauge group. So here you have VA for each of the three SU2s, but because the gauge coupling constant of this one and the last one is zero, effectively you only consider the lowest component, because this is the zero instanton sector, this is the one instanton sector, et cetera, et cetera. So you prepare a vector of this very simple form for this space and the other space, and you have three contributions from the gauge multiplets and also a hypermultiplet contributions coming from the upstairs, coming from the hypermultiplet. So you think of this hypermultiplet contribution as a map from VA associated to here to VA associated to the middle node, because the hypermultiplet contribution depends on the gauge field configuration here and there, because this hypermultiplet is coupled to both of the gauge groups, right? So by specifying pairs of Young diagrams here and there, you specify a certain hypermultiplet contribution. But this can be thought of as a matrix indexed by this Young diagrams and the other Young diagrams. So you think of this HM as a multiplication to this vector space given by this, well, standard formula. So this is a matrix multiplication, right? You sum over this index, and the remaining index becomes the index of the resulting vector. So this is the standard Nikolsov partition function, and you can reformulate it as starting from this stupid vector associated to zero instanton and multiplying by this operator H, And this Q of n just counts the number of instantons. So n acting on this space VA counts the instanton number. And again, you multiply by this hypermultiplet operator. And you close the system, close the calculation by contracting with another lowest component vector. So the result is that in the case of SU2 with four flavors, you can reformulate the calculation of the instanton calculus as this composition of operators acting on this space of V of A, which associate a number to each pair of Young diagrams. So this is just a reformulation. So let me recap. Well, this is just what I said. So the necklace of partition function is a slightly generalized version of the prepotential. And prepotential is just a superspace version of the action, effective action. So this is nothing to be scared of. And you can, and people have written down a very explicit formula for this Z. But there is a nicer way to recast them into this language of infinite dimensional vector space and matrix. So for the pure case, you just have a very stupid vector, and the Z is the inner product of it with itself. SU2 with four flavors has this form. But of course, there is a completely different way to encode the prepotential without any of this complication, which is the Seiberg-Witten theory. So let me come to the more traditional type of determination of the prepotential. So this is the standard Seiberg-Witten theory. So let's consider SUN, again, pure theory. The Seiberg-Witten curve is given by this form. So this is the Martinek-Warner form of the Seiberg-Witten curve. So you should think of this Z as parameterizing a sphere with two punctures at Z equals zero, at Z equals infinity. And you have a degree n polynomial here. So at each Z, you solve this equation to find n solutions. So this equation describes n sheeted cover of the base sphere. So I'd like to call this base curve as the Gyota curve, and the resulting cover is the more well-known Seiberg-Witten curve. So you specify a certain set of cycles on top of it. And what Seiberg-Witten said is that those vacuum expectation values AI, or the dual variables AID, is given by the integral of a certain differential form, which is a very natural thing associated with this, over those cycles. So this is the rule. And they said that prepotential F can be read off by inversely solving this differential equation, which gives AID in terms of the partial derivatives of the prepotential. So this is the structure. But as I told you, in some sense, this combination YDZ over Z is more important than these coordinates itself, because they really give the mass. So you can rewrite this equation in terms of lambda, which is this differential. So what you do is to multiply the both sides by dz to the power n. So you can convert this equation into this form. So you move this term into the other side, and you multiply a sufficient number of dz to some power, so you get this kind of equation. So lambda to the n, dot, 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 equals zero, where phi of k of z is just uk times this power of dz over z, and phi n is contributed from this term and the other term, right? So you have a constant term, or the z term, 1 over z term, like this. So the only thing which is important later is that this has a worse singularity than the others. So all the other phi k's will behave like 1 over z to the kth, but the last one, phi n, behaves like 1 over z to the nth plus 1. So this is the structure. So let me, so in fact, this describes how you wrap M5 branches to get the four-dimensional gauge theory. So this spacetime gives you, so you start from four-dimensional spacetime times this two-dimensional fiber over this four, two-dimensional base. So this is also four-dimension. So 4 plus 4 plus 3 is 11, which is suitable for M theory. So you consider this spacetime, and you wrap M5 branches on this surface. So you get N equals 2 gauge theory. So I told you how to get SU2 pure gauge theory in terms of this construction. In order to get SU2 gauge theory with four flavors, it is known that you can write down the Seiberg-Witten curve in this form, lambda squared equals phi 2 of z, where instead of two punctures at 0 and infinity, you have four punctures at 0, 1, and q in the infinity. And at each of the punctures, this field phi of 2 behaves like mass squared divided by z minus zi squared. So at each puncture, phi 2 behaves like second order poles, and the residue of that pole gives you the mass of those four hypermultiplets. And the cross ratio of the four points gives you the UV coupling constant of this gauge theory. So, well, this has been known for quite some time if we do the N equals 2 gauge theory calculation. Okay, so let me summarize what I told you so far. So for a given gauge theory with N equals 2 supersymmetry, you can calculate something called Nekrasov's partition function, which, as I told you, can be recast into this nice form. So for pure SU2, you have a vector, and it's the z is its inner product with itself. For SU2 with four flavors, you start from a vector, apply a matrix, propagate, apply another matrix, and you close the calculation. On the other hand, the Seiberg-Witten curve can be written as a two-sheeted cover, because I'm talking about SU2 gauge theory, of a certain curve called Giotto curve. So pure SU2 case has two punctures around here. In the four-flavor case, you have four punctures around here. And this looks very similar to the conformal block calculation in two dimensions. So you can instead think of these two-dimensional surfaces as describing some 2D physical system with operators inserted at the punctures. So if you perform radial quantization or whatever, this puncture would create a certain state. This another puncture also would create another state. And this looks like a calculation of the inner product of this state with the other. So this is like this if you do the calculation in 2D side. On this side too, if you perform the calculation, so you prepare a state by inserting an operator here, and this operator will act on this vector space, giving a state living here, and you apply another operator, and you close with the out state. So you really see a nice similarity between the two constructions. And what we found last June is that, in fact, the resulting expressions are the same. So I'm going to describe how it becomes equal. So let me phrase it a bit again in a mathematical terms. So given a Riemann surface with punctures, you can wrap M5 branches on it to get a 4D field theory, right? So we have a map. Well, I called it a map, but this is a very transcendental object, because given a Riemann surface, it spits out for the field theory, right? So this is a very interesting machine. And this G of N is a nice thing, nicely behaved map, because if you split the Riemann surface, then the 4D field theory should also split. Because you compactify a theory on a two disconnected surface, you should just get a two disconnected theories, right? So what happens is that if you calculate whatever physical quantity of this 4D theory, which formally is an association of a number to a given 4D field theory, then if you combine this operation G of N and this Z, you get an operation which assigns a number to a Riemann surface with punctures, which behaves naturally if you split the Riemann surface. And if you recall what you might have learned when you first studied string theory, 2D CFD is defined as a way to associate a number to a correlation function of a certain number of operators on the Riemann surface, and they are defined to satisfy lots of consistency conditions. So this construction satisfies most of the consistency conditions almost by construction. So this means that for the this construction should give you some 2D field theory out of 4D field theory. So what will we get if we start from 2M fibrils? And again, there is a way to kind of understand what should happen. So if you wrap 2M fibrils, for example, on a cylinder, you should get SU2 gauge group. And the vacuum expectation value of SU2, I mean, vacuum of the SU2 gauge theory is labeled by a variable A. Because SU2 matrix is 2x2 matrix with zero trace, so it can be labeled by one complex number. But of course, you still have the residual gauge symmetry exchanging A and minus A. So whatever CFD you should get out of this construction should be such a CFD whose state is labeled by a number A, but with the identification A goes to minus A. And there is a nice work by Teschner, et cetera, who showed that such a 2D CFD is basically almost forced by the consistency to be the Liouville theory. And indeed, that's what we found. So Liouville theory is a 2D theory which describes a propagation of waves reflected off exponential wall. So the action is just the kinetic term of the boson representing this wave and the exponential interaction. And in order to make this theory into a 2D conformal theory, the background charge Q should be related to the strength of the exponential or the steepness of the exponential interaction. So given this B, the background charge Q is fixed to be B plus 1 over B, and the central charge is given by 1 plus 6 times Q squared. So the proposal is simple. So given the Seiberg-Witten curve in this form, this phi of 2 is a quadratic differential on the Riemann surface. Liouville theory has T of Z, which is the energy momentum tensor. So both of them has spin 2 on the world volume. So the identification we propose is a very simple one, which is that the vacuum expectation value of T of Z should become phi of 2 itself in the limit. So this combination is very similar to what I showed you, I mean, in the definition of the Nekrasov partition function, because this Z is supposed to be exponential of epsilon 1, epsilon 2 over F. So in other words, if you take log of Z and multiply by epsilon 1 and epsilon 2, this should go become the free potential F, right? So I'm just saying that in the side of the instanton calculation, you should take some quantity and properly normalize by multiplying by epsilon 1 and epsilon 2, and then that should go to some gauge theory quantity appearing in the definition of the prepotential. Of course, you need to identify the variables in both sides. So we identify the momentum of the Liouville theory with the vacuum expectation values, as I just said, and the background charge is given by the rotation angles. So, for example, how should we identify these operators in the case of SU2 with four flavors? So, as I told you, in the gauge theory description, phi of 2 behaves like m squared over z squared at each point. This means, under the identification I gave you in the last slide, that this OPE of T of Z with respect to V alpha should behave like M squared divided by epsilon 1 and epsilon 2. So this means that V of A is a primary state of the V-Russell algebra whose dimension is basically given by M squared divided by epsilon 1 and epsilon 2. In the case of pure SU2, you have a slightly worse singularity, as I emphasized. So phi 2 behaves not only like 1 over z squared, but there is a term which goes like 1 over z cubed. And as I told you, you need to identify phi 2 with a certain limit of t of z. And if you open the textbook on CFT, t of z is expanded like L0 over z2, L1 over z cubed, et cetera, et cetera. So you identify mu to be L0 and lambda squared basically to be L1. Of course, there can be a slight quantization error because it is like introducing an extra Planck's constant, which is basically epsilon 1, epsilon 2. So you find that you need to add a certain term, but you identify L0 to have a certain eigenvalue, q squared minus a squared, and L1 to behave like lambda squared over epsilon 1, epsilon 2, et cetera, et cetera. So this is something like a coherent state in the V-Russell algebra, because this annihilation operator, L1, which decreases the number of the descendants, should have a certain eigenvalue. So what you do to determine such a state is just to expand this state in terms of the descendant, so you can put the arbitrary coefficients everywhere. And what you do is to apply, so impose this condition. So, for example, applying L1 to here will make C to be this L1, L minus 1 gives you the primary A with some coefficient, right? So this determines C in terms of 1. So you can determine recursively this state, and you form the inner product, and it magically agrees with Nekrasov's partition function. So let me demonstrate that. I don't know if it's necessary or not, but it's always fun. So this is the definition of Q squared. Can you read it? And this is the definition of the central charge C, right? So this is the calculation which evaluates the commutation relation of the strings of L's, I mean the V-Russell generators. And so this calculates the inner product, and this is the Katz matrix of the V-Russell algebra, so this is the inverse Katz matrix. And Mironov and Morozov found a nice formula which determines the inner product of the coherent state in terms of the inverse Katz matrix. So anyway, you have a nice formula here. So this is the CFT side. And you need to list all of the pairs of Young diagrams, which can be done using a combinatorical package of Mathematica, where you need to implement formula of Nekrasov, or I don't have to see the screen. No, I can just. Anyway, so this is the instanton contribution. So this is the gauge theory side. So this is the mapping I told you. So at the one instanton level, pure. This is the gauge theory calculation, right? This side is the CFT calculation. They look different because
In the one instanton side, you have two contributions, right? Empty box and box empty. But if you take the difference, they are zero. And, well, you can go to two instanton sector. And there are one, two, three, four, five contributions, right? You can easily understand why there are five contributions, because I need to enumerate all of the pair of Young diagrams, so with two boxes. So you have these guys, you have these guys, and finally this guy, right? So there are five terms. On the other side, you have, well, something complicated, but the difference is zero. So, well, maybe it's no longer necessary, but you can go to three instantons. Looks more and more complicated, but they are the same. So it really works. So this is something interesting, I think, to me at least, because, well, CFD has been studied, and this is just a pure V-Russell algebra stuff, right? So this has been studied for 30 years or something. In the gauge theory side, too, this is a very simple partition function associated to the instanton moduli itself, and the instanton moduli was first determined by ADHM in 1970. So in some sense, both sides of the equations exist in the literature for 30 years, but somehow there is this interesting relation between the two.
Now a proof, right? The two are the same?
For this case, there is a proof. Yes.
So who it is?
I will come back to that. There is a slide for reviewing that. Okay. So that was SU2 case, and the generalization to SUN can be easily done. You need to replace the view theory by something called Todak theory, which has not only the energy momentum tensor, but the higher spin object. So that T of Z is also called as W2, and there are W3, W4, delta Z to W capital N, and Cyber-Gutian curve has also the same type of object. So again, you associate the same rule, so you just let epsilon 1 times epsilon 2 times the vacuum expectation value of this two-dimensional object, and you identify that with the coefficient appearing in the Cyber-Gutian curve. So the momentum, again, is related to the V, or I forgot to put the square root, and the steepness of the exponential interaction is, again, associated to epsilon, and C, central charge, is determined by that, etc., etc. So what's the status? So there are many checks done by various people, Malchakov, Mironov, Morozov, etc., but I think the most spectacular thing was done by Fateh from Litvinov last December, who proved that indeed the necklace of partition function with massive adjoint is equal to the torus 1-point conformal block. So how they did it is to show that both sides satisfy a nonlinear recursion relation. So nonlinear recursion relation relates basically the two instanton contribution to the square of the one instanton contribution, or three instanton contribution to the product of two instanton contribution times the one instanton contribution, something like that. So it's a nonlinear recursion relation which determines all of the higher order terms just starting from the lowest order term. So Pogosian conjecture the form of the nonlinear recursion relation. So the nonlinear recursion relation in the conformal block side was, of course, long being studied, especially by Zamolochkov. So he knew the nonlinear relation, and these people generalized and really proved that there is a nonlinear recursion relation. And Fateh Litvinov showed that the same recursion relation holds on the gauge theory side too. So that's proved. And the pure case is also proved by these three Polish physicists. SUN case is not as much studied, but well, there is a nice set of results. So I said the generalization to SUN, but you can go down from SU2 to U1, right? Because U1 should be simpler. And I was quite surprised when Hiraku Nakajima told me that, in fact, Carlson and Okounkov, who are mathematicians, have done exactly the same calculation in 2008 before our work. So what these mathematicians did was to calculate necklace of functions of U1 quivers. Well, field theoretically, it doesn't make much sense because they are asymptotically non-free, et cetera, et cetera. But formally, you can calculate those quantities. So you just consider U1 gauge groups and hypermultiplets and do the same calculation. And they found that, in fact, these are given by a correlator of a free boson on 2D surface. So in the mathematical terms, this space I associated to the gauge group, which is an association of a complex number to each of the pair of the Young diagram, is something called the equivalent cohomology group of the instanton moduli. So our observation, after all, was just a slight generalization of a proven mathematical theorem, in the case of U1, to U2. So instead of a free boson, we are saying that this equivalent cohomology of the instanton moduli is naturally the Verma module of the Virasoro algebra, and hypermultiples should give the vertex operator of those. So this is the mathematical reformulation of what we found, and well, someday this will be proved.
A question?
Yep.
So if you consider a UN theory,
yep.
Is there any sense that the theory factorizes to the U1 part?
Oh, yes, yes.
The UN part,
yeah.
And even the does the factorization hold for the Nekrasov partial function?
I think so, yeah. So, well, I completely neglected during this talk about the U1 factor because it complicates things. But so I should say that this VA is the product, tensor product of the Verma module of the WN algebra times this free boson. Yeah. Okay, so my time is almost up, but let me say a few words about the new thing I'm doing now. So it concerns the defects operator. So 6D theory on M5 brain has two basic type of defects. One is a 4D object. So this is a 6D object, and there can be a 4D object, and also a 2D object. 4D objects are intersections of M5 brains with other M5 brains. 2D objects are ends of M2 brains, M2 brains ending on M5 brain. So there are various choices in how you wrap these lower dimensional object inside 6D space, if you put 6D space on X4 times C2. And it was studied by various people, including them. And so, for example, if you wrap 2D objects on this 6D space, and if you distribute one dimension to X4 side, another dimension to C2 side, you get the loop operator in the four-dimensional side, which is also a loop operator in the 2D Riemann surfaces. So in this way, there is a nice result concerning the classification of the gauge theory loops in terms of the loops on the Riemann surface, etc., etc. Also, you can consider distributing two dimensions of the world volume of this on the X4 side and just putting points, which is a zero-dimensional object, on C2. So you have a surface operator in X4, but you have a point on the Riemann surface. So this says that if you put degenerate field in the Liouville theory, it corresponds to surface operators. If you put four world volume directions of these 4D objects on X4, this changes the theory. This is a standard puncture you put to realize the various type of N equals 2 theory. So let me, because you have this X4, just R3, 1, times a certain Riemann surface, right? So if you put this 4D object and put four-dimensional part of 4D objects on R3, 1, and you put one point, this is just changing the puncture structure of the Riemann surface on this side. So you change the theory on R3, 1. So this is how you generate many types of N equals 2 gauge theory. Today, I'd like to consider putting this 4D theory, and instead of doing this, I want to put two-dimensional part on this side and put the rest of the two-dimensional side on this Riemann surface. So this is a surface operator on the four-dimensional side, but changes the theory on the Riemann surface. What do we get? What are they? What are these 4D operators? So this is not that difficult, because if you consider just flat 6D space and consider this defect, the property of this object is independent of the direction you put, right? So if you perform S1 compactification twice, this becomes just 2D surface operator on 4D theory. So this is a surface operator in n equals 4 super Hamiltonian in 4 dimensions. So these are very well studied, carefully studied by Gukov and Witten. So what it does is to generate a singular gauge field of this form. So this theta is the theta direction around the surface operator. The geometry might be a bit confusing, so let me say a bit better. So you think of R4 to be C2, right? So you have two complex plane intersecting at one point. So you put surface operator here. So you still have two-dimensional transverse space, and I'm saying that this is the angle theta, and there is a singularity of the gauge field of this form. So let's just consider the most general case where alpha i's are all different. Let's call it the full surface operator. This is a different surface operator than the one we considered in our previous paper, which corresponds to inserting a defect in the Riemann surface side.
Is this like the report?
This has, I think so, yeah. So this corresponds to the full puncture, but put on the space-time side. So what is this theory on C2? So because this changes the theory on the Riemann surface. So let me compare the two situations. So without the surface operator, when we calculated the necklace of partition function, we calculated this complicated formula. But that was an integral over the instanton moduli with k instantons, right? With the full surface operator, we need to sum over the instanton moduli with surface operator inserted. And in this case, you need to specify n integers, not just one integer, which specified the instanton number. Not only the instanton number, but you need to specify the monopole flux living on this surface operator. So you can think of instantons living on this other surface, but you have a certain gauge flux through this 2D surface. So you need to specify them. So you need to consider this more complicated space. So this is the review of what I just told you in the case of without the surface operator. Without the surface operator, ZA of A is a summation over Young diagrams, and you associate a nice vector space with, and the instanton partition function is this inner product of this vector with itself. With the surface operator, the fixed points are labeled by n by n matrix of Young diagrams. You need to sum over those things, but you can again associate a nice vector space V of S. And again, the pure partition function is just an inner product of a vector with itself, et cetera, et cetera.
What's the difference between this surface operator and the previous one?
The number of previous one, you mean? So the punctures on the Riemann surface, as you know, is specified by Young diagram again, right?
Yeah.
It's confusing, but this is... So in this case, there are n boxes here.
Yeah.
So this surface operator is again associated to the Young diagram, but this specifies the commutant of this singular part of the gauge connection. So So if this is completely general, the commutant is just U1 to N minus 1, right? On the other hand, the simple surface operator we considered, both U and considered, is you need to take alpha 1 minus alpha 1, 0, 0, 0,
0. Right? You only have a U1 factor.
Yeah. So here you have U1 times SU N minus 1.
Okay, but then this guy will be still 2.2, no, it's not 0. There's another
one.
There's yet another surface operator that has 0.4, but that has extra parameters. Because the scalar can have a pole as you approach the surface operator.
Okay.
Okay, but...
So yeah, So... as I told you, this V of A, without the surface operator, is conjectured to be the Verman module of the V-rational algebra with this central charge. What's this V of A associated to the surface operator? Surprisingly, it had been proved by a mathematician in 2004. So I'm quite surprised by finding this literature, but this V of A with the surface operator is the Verman module of affine SLN algebra with level minus n plus epsilon 2 over epsilon 1. So we are not doing anything new. I said in the start of this talk that I'd like to talk a bit about something new, but in fact, I'm just translating what mathematicians knew. But anyhow, this means that the theory on the Riemann surface is now SLN WZW model. Also, there's a nice connection between W algebras and SLN. So there is something called quantum Drinfeld Sokolov Hamiltonian reduction, known in the CFD literature, which is a powerful machine which produces a representation of the W algebra given a representation of affine D algebra. So if you start from the affine SLN algebra itself as the representation, this machine produces W algebra. If you start from the Verman module of SLN algebra, it spits out Verman module of the W algebra. And in fact, if you start from this level K and apply this machine, you really get the correct central charge, which we noticed in our previous paper about the relation of the gauge theory and the 2D CFD. And Nekrasov partition function becomes the conformal block of SLN. Affine D algebras. So that was all I wanted to say. So the summary is this. So you start from six-dimensional theory, living on N MFI brains, and with punctures, and you wrap, so you start from 6D theory and rewrap that on a Riemann surface punctures, and you get the 4D theory. So there is a 4D gauge theory living on the 4D side, and a 2D theory living on the 2D side. So there is a nice relations between physical quantities on both sides. So if you calculate the instanton partition function in 4D, you get V-rational conformal block in 2D. If you consider instanton partition function with full surface operator, you get SLN conformal block in 2D. Thank you very much. If not,
is there a statement for similar statements for other gauge groups?
Other gauge groups?
Yeah.
In fact, mathematicians are quite clever in that this construction always works for whatever gauge groups.
Yeah.
So if you start from the gauge group G, then what you get is the affine D algebra associated to the Langlands dual of G. So if you start from SP gauge group, you get SO odd affine D algebra.
Another question? Okay, not let's send you again.